Teams are starting to grab depth as they lose players before opening day. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, March 21st. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. While you're on that machine, send all your friends over to firstpitchpodcast.com. Subscribe to get every single episode of the pod every single weekday morning. Troy, a lot of stuff to catch up on. None of it's massive news, but all things that just teams having injuries, trying to bring in guys to help reinforce what they're doing. One of the big ones, the Texas Rangers had a pretty rough end of the week last week. Cody Bradford, lefty starter, went down with elbow soreness, the scary elbow soreness, on March 12th. 2 days later, John Gray, the righty starter, fractured his right wrist. And so their response was to sign lefty Patrick Corbin to a one-year deal. Guarantee of $1.1 million. Technically $3 million in incentives, but there's no way to reach this $3 million because the incentives are based on innings pitched and relief appearances. So to get the full $3 million, one, there's a trade assignment bonus. So he has to get traded. He gets $250,000 for that. He has to get traded. But he can unlock all $3 million by pitching 170 innings over 55 relief appearances. So that's obviously impossible to do, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to get all of this. But it's $2 million in innings and then another $1 million in the relief appearances. So he can get money either way, depending on if he's used as a starter or a reliever. And the big thing for Patrick Corbin is he's not been good in a while, but he's been available. Like, that's the big thing. When you look at what Patrick Corbin has done the last couple seasons in Washington, the first one was actually really good. First year of that deal, 200 innings, 325 ERA, 14-7 record. But since then, he's been pretty awful, but he's just put up innings. 171, 152, 180, 174. Given all of the injury concerns and the possibility of great performance from this Rangers rotation, right? Jacob DeGrom, your prospects and your Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter. Is this actually a pretty decent move, provided he can keep his ERA under 5?
Oh yeah, I love this move for the Texas Rangers because, as you put it perfectly, he's not great, but he eats innings and he posts every time he's supposed to post, and that's what they need because of the injury concerns in their rotation. Like, we've talked about it multiple times, Jacob DeGrom since 2021 has fewer starts than he is years old, and so it's they're going to need somebody that can eat those innings. And Patrick Corbin is that guy. He is the definition of a Chad innings eater because he's not going to post a good ERA, but he's going to post a lot of innings. And there are multiple teams that could have used him in the rotation. Cough, cough, New York Yankees, cough, cough, New York Mets. But yeah. even the Los Angeles Dodgers really could have used him as depth, but the Texas Rangers went out and got him. And I'm even okay with the price that they're paying him plus the incentives because of the fact that he is going to post and he is going to get 140 or more innings, even with a potentially diminished job than he had with the Washington Nationals over the past few years.
Yeah. And I kind of went back and pulled the last four seasons, like what he's done. His ERA was 5.71, but if you look at a lot of the underlying metrics, he was pretty unlucky. Plus, the Nationals weren't good on defense. Like, yeah. Batting average on balls in play was 328. So, little unlucky, right? Their defensive ratings, minus 96 outs above average during that same four-year span for Washington. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a bad defense. And so, when you look at some of the underlying numbers, like his Philly independent pitching, was $4.99. So like a full run, almost a full run better than his actual performance. The Sierra was $4.60. So like absolutely in a neutral defensive team, he would have been better. And if you can get an ERA under five, if you can get that 4.60 ERA in the back end and he makes 30 starts and gives you 170 innings, just enough for him to get that incentive, right? That final incentive, the 170 mark is $350,000 extra. So like get him to the 170. It's absolutely a win because you've got so many options, but like every single dude has workload questions. And so just being able to put him in every fifth day and say, hey, you know, if we can get five runs in this game, we'll probably have a chance to win, but we'll be in most of these. That's what you need. And I didn't think I would like the signing as much because he was so bad until I went and looked at all of those extra numbers. Now, the one thing that's odd is he's going to start the year either on the IL or an optional assignment because he's not ready. And he's not joining the team in Arizona, right? He won't join the team until they get to Texas after they break camp because his wife's having a baby in the next couple of days. So
congratulations.
Yeah. So something like they're going to have to use some of the young kids, Rocker, Leiter, and things like that, but they'll get Patrick Corbin after a couple of weeks. And if he doesn't miss any other starts, if he's back by mid-April, if it takes him a month to get ready and doesn't miss any other starts, he can still be in range of a lot of those incentives.
Yeah, for sure. It's huge for the Rangers. I like this signing a lot for them with their pitching depth issues. And, you know, you talked about the defense that the Nationals had. CJ Abrams is the shortstop there. That's about all you need to know. And so the defense that he's going to be pitching in front of now is a whole lot better. Plus the offense, you kind of put it spot on where if the offense can put up five runs when he's pitching, they'll still be in the game. And their offense can put up five runs pretty easily. They've got a pretty good offense, especially if all of the offensive guys stay healthy. So it's a good fit, in my opinion. I really like it a lot, and I think it's gonna be a better outcome than most probably think it will be.
Fun note on the CJ Abrams thing there. I remember towards the end of the year when Washington was wrapping up their series against Atlanta, there was a great stat in Atlanta's game notes that CJ Abrams, since he got to Washington, like 45% of all of his defensive errors have come against the Atlanta Braves because he's an Atlanta area guy. And so my first thought process was, well, like if he gets the yips when he plays against Atlanta, just go trade for CJ Abrams. Just go get him and put him on your team. Hopefully he won't have those same issues. Like just add him to your roster, replace Orlando Arce with CJ Abrams, and maybe you can figure it out because he's going to have to move off a short in Washington. Like if he stays in Washington, and that's the problem is you've got options everywhere else, whether it's second base, Brady House is about to come up for third. You've got a ton of outfielders that are young that you like there's not many places for him to go. That's why he's still at short, is they don't have anywhere else for him to play, but trade him to Atlanta. Give him to us. Okay. Speaking of the Braves, they signed veteran outfielder Alex Verdugo for $1.5 million deal. He consented to an optional assignment to Gwinnett to get ready to ramp up for the season. Reminder on that. If you have 5 years of service, you can refuse an optional assignment. So he's going to head to minor league camp and get ready. He was awful last year with the bat, worst year of his career, like an 83 OPS plus, but still a quality defender, two-time gold glove finalist, led baseball and outfield assists in 2023, led the American League in 23, still had like seven or eight last year in left field for the Yankees. Is this one of those like, hey, that's almost no cost. If you can fix them offensively or you have a ton of injuries, it works out. And if you don't need them, who cares? It's $1.5 million. Like, is this a good deal for Atlanta?
It's another good depth option for that outfield. And especially defensively, not so much offensively. It's just, to me, I think it's a little bit outside of Atlanta's normal mode of operation, just because of he's more of a he's got a big mouth. He likes to talk. He likes to run his mouth. And in my opinion, I think a pretty spot on comparison of Alex Verdugo is Jazz Chisholm, where both players
he's loud, he's flashy, he's flamboyant, yep. And that's not Atlanta.
Right, exactly. And honestly, neither guy offensively is good enough to back that up. Jazz Chisholm can be. He's not yet. But yeah, it's weird seeing the Atlanta Braves sign Alex Verdugo. And I think one of the crazier things about the Alex Verdugo signing is reportedly earlier in the week, news came out that he had not had a single contract offer from any team this offseason.
Big league offer, yeah. No formal big league offer. Okay, he probably had some minor league deals offered, but no formal big league offer. The Athletic had that report, yeah.
Yeah, and then what was it? 3 days later, the Atlanta Braves signed him. And so, it's defensively, it's a good depth piece, a good depth option. I mean, we saw what the Braves have done with those outfield depth options in the past. Over the past few years, they've done that a lot. And so it could work out well, specifically on the defensive side.
Yeah. One of the big things Atlanta's done, though, with those is they've had to scramble in season to get them, right? Yeah. They added DFA'd guys last year in Ramon Laureano. Worked out. Eddie Rosario did not work out. They signed Adam Duvall with a week left in spring and did not send him to Gwinnett to get ready. He stayed with the team, and he never got back to MLB form. He just was not ready. He's also still a free agent right now and said he wants a major league deal or he'll probably retire. But we've seen the Braves now in the last couple of days. They've added 30-plus seasons of MLB experience by doing this. They got catcher James McCann, formerly of the Mets and Orioles. They got old friend Craig Kimbrell. Those two guys are in Gwinnett. Verdugo is going to join them. It just feels like Atlanta's kind of aware of, hey, like our roster, if everybody's healthy, is good enough to compete in the East. But we've had multiple years where not everybody's been healthy, and we don't want to have to scramble in season to add guys. So we're going to do it now instead. I don't hate it. Now, if they have to play Verdugo 100 games, that's a little bit nerve-wracking, right? But if this is something where, you know, you can get the first half of the season, Alex Verdugo, he hit 275 in like the first month of the year, fix some of the offensive issues, you're good. But I don't want to have to count on him all year, but it's nice to have him as depth. It is a major league offer, so that way I don't believe he has an opt-out available. Unless they negotiated one separately. There's not an automatic opt-out in there like there would be for most guys who finished last year on a major league roster and then signed a minor league deal. Those guys have opt-out dates. I don't believe Alex Verdugo has one, so, unless he negotiated a separate one. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if he's in Gwinnett all year. We'll see if he comes up and plays. And pressure's now on Jared Kelnick because they are practically the same person.
Yeah.
Quality defenders. Infield issues. Verdugo has a better history of being offensively valuable. Kelnick has better speed and can play center field at this point in his career, where Verdugo does not. He has not started in center field since 21. And so it's like that meme from The Office where it's like, Corbett, once you look at the differences in these two photos, they're the same photo. Like it's the same player, practically the same player. So pressure's got to be on Jared Kelnick a little bit to not flop in his platoon role when the season starts so that he doesn't get replaced by Verdugo. Let's do another extension before we get to some of these injuries. Jose Trevino, catcher Jose Trevino, signed a 3-year extension with the Cincinnati Reds. And this one was super intriguing. They got him from the Yankees in December, reliever Fernando Cruz and catcher third, fourth catcher, Alex Jackson, went the other way. And he was already under contract for $3.425 million this year. The new deal is now that salary stays. 26 and 27 is $5.25 million. And then a $6.5 million option for 2028 with a $1 million buyout. So $11.5 million in new money over 2 years. And they can get a third year of control for a 32-year-old that's never never played a regular season game for them.
Yeah.
Are you in or out on extending a guy before Like extending a guy who's not a stud before he plays a single game for you.
Yeah, I'm a little out on this because, as you said, he hasn't played a single game. It's kind of crazy that they have done this. Like it doesn't really make much sense that he hasn't played a single game. However, on the other spectrum of it, like I pulled up his Baseball Savant page and he has the worst pop time in Major League Baseball. It is one percentile of
yeah, like he's a good defender, like blocking and stuff.
Yeah.
But not controlling the running game. And offensively, yeah, he's been garbage in his career. He's never been a good hitter in his career.
Right. I think that the reason why they did this and why they wanted to bring him in the first place and then why they extended him is for his framing, because his framing has been pretty elite throughout the past few years. And, you know, you have a guy like Hunter Green who has a lot of velocity and not so much control, but if he can get it close to that edge and Jose Trevino's catching, he can steal a few more strikes for Hunter Green and make that ERA look a little bit better and maybe steal a few more strikeouts here and there. And so I kind of get it as far as that aspect. I still don't get the 3-year extension before he's even played a meaningful game.
I understand the whole idea of Tyler Stevenson, the young guy you already have as your primary catcher, who's on the IL right now, or he's going to go on the injured list, oblique strain. This being something where, like, he's an offensive first guy, so maybe one, Trevino can help him defensively, and then two, he's a good complement to give you a defensive first guy if you need that defense behind the plate for any specific game or pitcher. Like you said, maybe there's a thing where, like, there's a certain pitcher that he will catch every time, and the organization's best catching prospect is a former international free agent, 19-year-old Alfredo Duno. So he's not going to, like, he got like 30 games in single A last year. He's not going to be up for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense where if you get Duno up early, you have the option to combine Trevino and Duno. Stevenson's played some first base in his career as well. And if not, you've got those two guys together for the next couple of years and you can bring him back. That the money feels kind of normal for a low to mid 30s catcher. I'm just worried that you extend out so far when catching has the potential to fall off a cliff because of wear and tear. That's, I think, my big concern here is the money's not huge. You can eat the money if you have to, but it just feels like it was a risk that maybe you didn't need to do. Like, maybe you could have tacked on one additional year with the club option. Again, assuming the player agrees to it, these things do work both ways. But it just felt like it was a little bit riskier than it needed to be, given like the fact that backup defensive catchers are this cost anyway. And there's always guys available every year in free agency who you can grab, who can be good defenders, and you can get them on shorter deals. So you locked in a little bit of extra risk where I don't know if you needed to, but the pairing makes sense given what Stevenson's good at and what Trevino's good at.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I think that once Tyler Stevenson comes back because of what he brings to the table on offense, I don't think Trevino is going to be the everyday starter. I think it's going to be kind of like you said, he catches one or two pitchers religiously every time through the rotation. But Tyler Stevenson is the everyday starter because of his offensive prowess. And the lack of it from Jose Trevino.
True. All right. Two injuries. Let's start with the not surprising one. Royce Lewis is going to start the year on the injured list for the Minnesota Twins. Moderate hamstring strain. He pulled up over the weekend running out of grounder. This is like it was. They called it moderate. They did say it wasn't close to the severity of the quad strain that he had last year, where he missed more than 2 months. But there's no formal timetable for his return. We've seen the last 2 years, he's played 140 games. But like we've seen just a ton of injuries now. Hamstrings, obliques, quad, adductor strains, a lot of muscular stuff. Had two ACL tears, 2021 and I think one in 2022. I remember a moment where the Kansas City Royals said that they could no longer count on blanking on who it was, count on somebody to be available because of the repeated injuries that he had. One of their infielders, their dynamic infielders. It's going to drive me nuts. I'll look for it while you're talking. But is this a situation where the Twins should no longer count on having Royce Lewis available? And if he is, great, find a way to use him, but don't count on having him available ever?
Yeah, no, at this point, because of his track record of injury, I would say yes, but because of the Minnesota Twins track record with injured players that are consistently injured, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to continue to count on him because for whatever reason, they have it in their head that just because a player is good when he's on the field 20 times a season, then they're good. They don't have to have a viable backup option.
Adalberto Mondesi. Mondesi's the guy. Yep. There you go. Yeah, they ended up trading him for like some like lefty reliever or something because he just was never available. And then they finally, I don't think he ever played a game for Boston because of injury. And so, yeah, like he doesn't even show up on Immaculate Grid for Boston because he never played for them. That's who I'm thinking of.
Dude, Adalberto Mondesi was fast. If he would have stayed healthy. And it's mostly these fast guys that you see that get injured a lot, really.
The muscular stuff. Yeah, makes sense.
But no, the Twins, they should have that mindset. Will they? Probably not, because we've seen they extended Byron Buxton. They gave Byron Buxton a $100 million contract extension. Like, if that's not depending on somebody to be on the field, I don't know what is. They're freaking stupid. I don't know, man. I don't get it.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
Man, I tried. I tried to get through that without bringing up Byron Buxton, but it's just, I can't.
That's part of the reason I did it, was I knew you'd do that. Yeah, looking at Mondesi, his games played 2017, 25, 2018, 75. 2019, he played 102 games, led baseball in triples with 10, and hit 263. The shortened 2020 season, 59 of 60 games, led baseball in stolen bases with 24, hit 256. And then after that, 35 games in 21, 15 games in 22. They traded him. And he never played an official game, even in the minors, for Boston. Wow. I believe he is now out of the league. I don't think he's signed with anybody. I think he's officially technically a free agent and is done, right? Man.
Yeah, it's crazy. He honestly, if he would have stayed healthy, he had a pretty good chance of breaking Ricky Henderson's stolen base record because of how fast he was. Like, he's up there with like Billy Hamilton and Bubba Thompson for speed.
I'm not going to go as far as saying Ricky Henderson, but yeah, I will say he was super fast and everything. Okay, Jared Jones of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He will miss the rest of spring training with elbow discomfort. And the senior director of sports medicine told reporters on Wednesday morning the club performed medical imaging on Jones and is currently awaiting a second opinion. So, one, that dude's elbow is cooked. And two, how much does this suck for the Pirates? Because really the only thing they had going for them this year was the pitching. They were going to have Paul Skeens. They were going to have Jared Jones in there. Bubba Chandler is one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. They were going to be able to call him up. And this was going to be a very exciting young rotation. It was going to be like putting really fancy wheels on a Pinto. But like it was going to be a really exciting rotation. And now odds are they're not going to have Jared Jones this year. Whenever you're waiting for second opinions after imaging on an elbow for a pitcher, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good at all. We saw what happened with the second opinion a couple weeks ago with Gerrit Cole and the New York Yankees, and now he's out for all of this season and a good bit of next season. So the Pirates just can't catch a break, man. First they lose the poop game, and now they're losing Jared Jones. So it's not a good time to be a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. At least they do still have Paul Skeens to watch. I mean, that's exciting, and you know, you can continue watching him and him develop and potentially win a National League Cy Young this year with what he showed last year.
And adding new pitches.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not fair, man. Adding new pitches to what he already has. And that I know I already said it before, but that new two seam, the video I saw of it, that thing's got some nasty break for a two seam fastball. And it's insane. But yeah, Jared Jones being out potentially for quite some time is not good for them. And it's going to be a long season in Pittsburgh.
Speaking of Skeens, real quick while we're here, that one of one rookie debut patch autograph card just sold yesterday at auction for $1.11 million. It is the second highest price for an active MLB player's card behind only Mike Trout.
Wow.
And it is, I have a thing here, it is the sixth all-time most expensive card sale among an MLB player. And all the rest of them, you know, were Trout, Ruth, Honus Wagner, Mickey Mantle, things like that. So that 11-year-old kid in California is going to bring home apparently $990-something thousand off of this.
Wow.
So just absolutely wild.
Put it in the market.
$925,000. So happy for him. Couple other real quick injuries that we've seen pop up. Ryan Weathers of the Marlins, 4 to 6 weeks with a forearm strain. Andrew Abbott of the Reds, starting the year on the IL. Drew Thorpe of the White Sox, I believe, left his start with elbow discomfort. He's getting imaging. And Brooks Lee of the Twins was scratched yesterday with lower back tightness. He's had back issues before. So we're seeing teams start to like lose guys and have to go out and find replacements. I'm curious to see what happens out of this. Before we head into the weekend, any final thoughts here?
No, man, it's been a fun week. It's been a great week. Make sure we're coming up on 500 subscribers pretty fast. So if you ain't subscribed already, I know a lot of y'all that watch aren't. So if you ain't subscribed, make sure you do so we can reach that 500 mark.
Yep. Goal is to get 500 by opening day. So help us out with this, folks. In the meantime, that's been First Pitch for Friday, March 21st. You're listening on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Again, trying to get to 500 by opening day. Maybe also leave us a 5-star review. That'd be super awesome. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.